Welcome back to Arts About.
This is a show about art, Sally, and a work of art in itself, Mark, we like to think.
It is, yes.
Might be a spurious thought, but...
we live in hope.
Yeah, we do. No, we don't. We do it every week. Arts About is, of course, brought to you by the generosity of the McClelland Sculpture Park and Gallery and facilitated by the Bendigo Bank Studio. I'm Sally Bailey and you're here with me in the Audible Peace Studios this week with artist-in-residence and cultural sounding board John Baird and the ever-surprising Mark Stewart. Brody Guzet is keeping us on topic, on time and on the airwaves once again. So, John, what have you got for us this week?
Oh, pet stories.
Oh, that's a change. What sort of pet stories?
Well, not the Beach Boys album. But,
right, actual pets.
Yeah, I've had some terrible things happen to me with small animals.
Should we be talking about it on live radio?
You know, I once stood on a sparrow. I was walking down the main street of Rye and a sparrow flew under my boot and I crushed it.
Oh.
A whole crowd of people backed away from me.
You're not famous as an animal lover, John.
dear, that's terrible. I'm not sure what to say. Mark?
Well, I'm going to be talking a little bit about the south of France. Maybe a bit Tracy Moffat, if we're lucky. and also, other Sgt. Pepper's, yes. 50 years since Sgt. Pepper's came out.
Well, it is a bit of a centenary, or a bicentenary. What do you say? What's half of a centenary?
Actually just 50 years.
50 years, okay. It's a 50-year anniversary also today of the Flinders Art Show. And we've got the president of the committee for the Flinders Art Show, Christine Hayden, coming in. Oh, she's here actually today to tell us about that show that they're presenting on the Queen's birthday weekend. So she's coming in a moment. We are once again blessed to have the wonderful Cliff Ellen giving us his view from the cliff
Cliff's
a little
coming
later.
Back.
Cliff's coming back, I know. He must have missed us a little bit. And to celebrate the 50-year anniversary of the Sgt. Pepper's album release, here is the Sgt. Pepper's title track. Oh, that was a rather abrupt end there. The Flinders Art Show is celebrating its 50th year this year and, as always, is presenting a vast array of paintings by both local and further afield artists keen to share in the broad appeal the show generates and also the substantial prizes donated by local businesses. What began as a tiny event in 1967 has grown to be the large event it is today on the back of local traders and volunteers who support the cause and now raise significant profits that are distributed back into the community via charities and community groups. And this morning I have the president of the committee, Christine Hayden, in with us to tell us a little bit more. And she's just mentioned to me on while we were off mic that she was actually one of those girls actually I think it was the Adelaide Beatles show here in 1967.
It was actually earlier than that, Sally, but hello, how are you?
Welcome to the show, Christine Hayden. Thanks for coming in today. The Flinders Art Show, 50 years, it's a very long time to be going, isn't it?
Oh, look, it's fantastic. I mean, you know, to think that a community event has been able to keep going for 50 years is just superb. And I think it's an absolute reflection of how everyone loves to have a part of this. And I think just about anyone who's been close to Flinders or lived nearby has been involved at some point in some way to ensure that we have a fantastic art show every Queen's birthday weekend. Mm.
What was the impetus for it in the first place?
It was originally the Ladies of St John's Church in Flinders, and they decided that they needed to raise some funds for the community, but they also needed an outlet to sell their art. So that's the purpose. It's a sort of twofold purpose in actual fact, and it's been going for that long, and it just sort of keeps going. And committee, I think the church, they realised fairly early in the piece that they needed a broader committee. So their involvement at that level changed probably about 30 or 40 years ago. But we don't have those records, unfortunately, to go back to be specific about that.
Yeah, it would have been pen and paper in those days. And now, it's obviously grown from a very modest beginning. How many artists are going to be included this year?
Well, last year, just as an example, we had 363 paintings. This year we'll have a similar amount.
Yep.
They're actually arriving all next Monday. So we'll be actually starting the hanging process that week. But one of the things we've got new this year is we've got 20 photographs.
Yes, a new section.
We've sort of broadened it out. I think it's probably a reflection of the times. A lot of people now are sort of looking to purchase photography. So we're always constrained by the size of the hall that we work in. And so we've had to put limits on that. We've accepted 20 photographs. And so that'll be interesting to see how that goes this year and what sort of community response we get, and we'll go from there. But it's a new thing for us.
The venue's gotten bigger, though, hasn't it, over the years?
Look, what we've done, we've added a marquee.
That's right, where the party is.
But obviously from the marquee point of view, we can't put paintings in there and leave them overnight for security reasons. And looking back over history, can I just add one little thing? We found that when it originally started, the men of the church and the sons slept in the hall overnight to ensure the safety of the paintings. Oh. So we just thought that was quite cute when
guarding
we found that
art.
Out. You know? So they guarded the art, yeah.
You know, Sally?
Yes, Mike John?
I have been a prize winner and a judge at the Flinders Art Show.
Mm. I did know that. In fact, you've
not in the same year, as it turns out. Well,
probably a good thing. And in fact, I was just about to ask you about the judging process because I'm looking at the website. There are a huge number of prizes.
Yes, there are.
So how do you go about directing those prizes to the winners?
Well, we have three judges. Jane Alexander, who's the Arts and Cultural Coordinator and Director of the Mornington Peninsula Gallery, Regional Gallery. We've got Philip Culper, who's the founder of Source Photographica. So he's doing the photography. And we have Lynn Beaumont, who always does our equine awards. So essentially, the judges all work together. We give them a list of all the paintings. They go round. They choose the various winners, etc. And that's all done on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Then from there, it sort of all go to get to the winners and tell them about it and get them on opening night, etc. So there's quite a process. But the judges whilst there's special judges for special areas, it's usually a combined result that comes from that. So they mostly all have an input and work together.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's I'm just roughly counting at least 15 prizes. It's a fantastic thing, and all of them donated from businesses in the area, which is remarkable. It's also a fundraiser. So amount of money are you raising each year?
Well, the last few years we've raised $30,000, which is sensational amount, really.
Absolutely.
We do a lot of work on it, but it's a terrific result, and that's comes from a wide source. I mean, it's the proceeds from the paintings, sale of paintings, I should say, and the ticket sales, etc. But it's also donations. People do donate, and sometimes fairly considerable amounts. So that enables us to give away about $30,000, which is the last few years. That's the amount we've given, and we give it to a wide local. We keep it very local on the peninsula, that is, but we give it to a wide sort of section of the community. From the fire brigade, volunteer fire brigades, to the Flinders preschool, to Peninsula carers, to Hastings cancer support people, and Southern Peninsula food for Rosebud. So it's a varied list of people that they put a submission into us each year and tell us what they want in terms of financial support and what that financial support would be used for. So that's how...
And then the committee determine how to spread that round.
Correct,
yeah,
yes.
Well, this year I understand you've actually also designed yourselves a new logo.
Oh, yes. I mean, 50th year, you've got to take advantage of these things.
Yes.
You and Sergeant Peppers.
Well, no, we actually hadn't thought of that. But what we did come up with, and actually Neil Williams from Moo Creative design the logo for us, but one of our committee members came up with the idea of the weedy sea dragon. Now, the weedy sea dragon lives in grasslands under the sea, of course, rocky reefs and seabeds and sea meadows, and locally, mostly under the Flinders Pier.
Mm.
And they are an endangered species too. And interestingly, they've got fabulous colourings.
Mm.
So we've been able to use the purple, the yellow, the browns, reds and everything to combine to get a really colourful logo. So what a good idea was that?
Fabulous. So it's your 50th year, and of course the art show runs from the Friday night
yes.
through to the end of Monday or Monday afternoon.
Monday afternoon at 2 o'clock, actually. Yeah.
You have a big opening gala event at the beginning?
We do. It's open to the public and tickets are sold at the door at 7 o'clock on the Friday night. Mm-hmm. It's $30 a head to get into the opening night. That includes some wine, glass of wine, local wine. You know, the Peninsula Vinerongs always support us there, and some really nice nibblies. And then our MC, Master of Ceremonies, is Neil Mitchell, who always does a fabulous job for us. And so it's just a fun night for everyone to get together and catch up with people they haven't seen for a long time as well.
This year there's an added bonus of a laser show, I
That's
understand.
Right. I'm glad you mentioned that. That's the Mandala Visual Lightscape, it's called. And that's by Hamish Donald and Harry Evans. And they're a couple of young guys who have invented this laser light show, which is just incredibly colourful. Mm-hmm. And that will be outside the entrance as people come in.
What are they projected onto?
I think it's just into the sky, around the sky. And they also
probably have a smoke machine.
They also have a sort of a big circular arrangement, which is going to be on the wall, which changes colour.
Which is the mandala. So it sounds very LSD fog, doesn't it?
It does sound rather LSD fog.
So we're expecting, weather permitting, of course, but we're expecting that it's really going to light up Flinders.
Oh, yeah.
It's really going to be seen.
As long as they can keep the laser dry, it won't be any problem. And in fact, actually, if it rains, you'll get a better show.
Yes.
Believe it or not.
That's true. That's true.
You've got a new section, as you mentioned earlier on this year, which is a photographic section. And how do people tell us where it is and...
It's at the Flinders Hall, which is in Cook Street in Flinders.
Yep.
The other thing I should mention to you too, Sally, which is new for us, is the People's Choice Award.
Oh, yes. Terrific.
And that's the first time we've had a People's Choice Award. And we're asking everyone, they'll get a little piece of paper, to vote on that. And we will announce that at 2 o'clock on the Monday afternoon, just before the close of the event. So that will be exciting to see how everyone feels about a particular painting compared with the paintings that have
to the judge. Absolutely.
Well, in the Archibald, if the Packers Room choice never ever has won the main prize.
Yes, People's Choice is always varies slightly from there, rather than more.
Well, there's the People's Choice there, but also as Mark says, the Packers Prize, which is a different thing again.
Well, a couple of years ago, we introduced a Packers Prize, and we're calling it the President's Packers Prize, which is, BPP, so works well with
I like the Mornington Prime Cuts Award.
Yes, that's another one, work. Isn't it?
Well, that's it, everybody. It's the 50th year anniversary of the Flinders Art Show. It's on the Queen's Birthday weekend, which is the 9th through to the 11th, is it?
Yes.
Of June.
12th.
The 12th, thanks, Mark. I think you can go down there at any time. I think if you want to go, do you need to book tickets
up? Any time. You turn up at the door at Friday night, 7 o'clock.
And, that's a $30 ticket and the rest of it.
Exactly, and Saturday, Sunday, Monday, $5. $5 a ticket. Children are in for no charge. And it's 10 till 4, Saturday, Sunday, 10 till 2 on Monday.
Fabulous. Thank you so much for coming in
and talking
to us about it. Good luck with it. I hope you raise a lot of money.
Great.
That's Christine Hayden from the
much.
Flinders Art Show. Coming up next, I've got Joe Strummer and the Mescaleros with Johnny Appleseed.
Oh, I nearly missed that.
Oh, I know. Was I talking at the same time? Pet stories, John. I'm dying to hear some
really?
Pet stories. Yep, I really am.
Sure. You'd be surprised to have learned this, Mark, but I had a girlfriend at one stage and I was quite fond of this girl. I met her family.
What was her name?
I'm not going to reveal any names here.
I'm just trying to picture, put faces and names together. Anyway, go on.
I met this girl's family and we all had dinner together and her mother said to me, look, we're going to Sydney next week and your girlfriend is coming with us. And we're leaving Honey, the dog, at home. And I just wonder if you wouldn't mind popping around every afternoon and opening a can of dog food for Honey. And then the dog will be fine. You know, Honey's an old dog, doesn't need walking.
Labrador.
Doesn't need to be taken for a walk necessarily, but does need to be fed daily. I said, all right, that's fine, I'll do that. I'd never actually been to their house or met the dog. But they went away, and the first day I forgot.
Great. The story's going downhill fast.
And I went around after having forgotten one day, and I got around there, went around to the side of the house, and there's Honey laying on the ground as flat as a dog can lay and panting and in very bad shape. And I just thought to myself, well, one day without food, and look, it's just it's in terrible shape, this dog. And I got a sailing bag out of the car and managed to sort of carefully get the dog under the bag and carry it out to the car, went and found a vet.
Was it a little dog?
Well, we'll get to all of that.
Okay.
And I could carry it. I carried it out to the car and I went and I found a vet, and the vet came out and had a look in the boot and said, all right, we better bring the dog in. We took the dog inside and the vet did a bit of an examination, and he started the conversation saying, this dog is old, it's in pain. And I said, look, just stop right there. This is not my dog. And we both smiled at the reference to
Peter Sellers.
Peter Sellers.
Yes. It's not my dog. I thought you said your dog doesn't bite.
I said, it's not my dog, and I'm being charged with feeding it while the owners are away, or while its family are away. And he said, can you contact them? And I said, yeah. And so I rang them in Sydney, and he spoke to them, and I could hear the conversation, which was as you would expect. And, you know, the dog's got to be put down. And he came back and he said to me, well, we're going to proceed. So I held Honey's paw while he did the injection, and it didn't take very long at all. And then I left it at that. And a week or so later, there was a phone call from the girlfriend's mum. And she said, John, look, we've been grieving over Honey for a week in Sydney, and we got home to find that Honey is in fact alive and hungry in the backyard, and you've had someone else's dog destroyed.
That's terrible. And their dog was starving.
Yes.
This is the most terrible story. That's awful.
And she said further to that, there's a bill in the letterbox from the vet for the putting the dog down, and a query about what we want to do with the remains. And she said, with that, there is also underneath it in the letterbox a flyer with a picture of a black and white Kelpie on it called Jesse. Have you seen this dog? And a phone number.
Was that the dog?
Was that the dog? And she said, perhaps you'd like to come over and help us sort all this out. And I just hung up and thought, oh, there goes another girlfriend.
I couldn't
face it.
Oh, that's terrible. That is a really terrible story.
It gets worse, actually. Yeah, well, my brother Andrew. My brother Andrew and I were out to a party one night, and he had a Rover car, an old Rover, and we were late as usual. He was always late. And beautiful old car, but very heavy and kind of cumbersome thing. And as I said, we were late, and we shot around a corner heading in where we thought we were going, and there ahead of us on the road, quite a distance away actually, was like a cat sitting on the road. And Andrew knew that putting the brakes on in this car was pointless. It had the momentum of a wrecking ball, you know, and the brakes were hopeless. So rather than put his foot on the brakes, he went for the swerving action.
Yes.
The cat kind of jumped in the wrong direction.
Swerved
and there was
as
a,
well.
There was a boom, boom. And he slammed the brakes on at that point, and, you know, then we walked 100 metres back to where the cat was after we'd pulled this car up. And he's kind of a responsible fellow, Andrew, you know, and he's looking at this shape on the road. It wasn't really cat shape anymore. He'd sort of run over it and swerved on it, I think. And He said, well, we can't just leave it where it is.
It was dead, wasn't it?
Oh, it was completely dead.
Yeah.
And he walked up the driveway of the nearest house, knocked on the door. I went with him, knocked on the door, and a woman answered the door, and he said, do you own a black and white cat? And she said, yes. And he said, do you own a shovel? Which I thought was...
tactless. That's tactless.
A little sort of harsh. Mm. But she said, she got it.
She
understood what he was talking about straight away. So we went and got the cat off the road and laid it out on some newspaper on the front yard. The shovel wasn't to dig a hole, merely to get the cat off the road. And washed the shovel off with a hose, and we were leaving, and she sort of said to us, thanks for stopping, which I thought was ironic.
Yes, it was a little.
Hark!
What is that music?
Yes, what is that music? I think it could be time for That's Amazing, I Never Knew
I
That.
I think I might have to get another choice of music.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Okay. What's terrible? Gustav Mahler?
It's not him, but it doesn't work as an
introduction. Doesn't work as an introduction, no. Okay,
if you listen to Mahler long enough, Mark, you end up listening to songs for dead children.
Anybody that could write a song like King
that. Kinga questionable. Hmm. Yeah, but I'll get another piece of Mahler and that'll really give it to you.
All right,
so
then.
We'll see. Okay, so I'm going to read you a little story about the south of France and swallows.
Uh-huh. Written by?
By Mark Stewart, that's me.
Oh, by your good hand.
Yes. Hopefully we'll get through to the end, but we'll see. So Fonvier is a village about 10 kilometres from Arles. It's where I used to live. John Russell spent time there in the 1880s.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a lovely little village. So here we go. Driving the back way from Fonvier to the hospital of Arles, through the ancient seaways and Japanese print sunsets of Barbigal, the rabbits have myxomatosis and sit blindly on the roadside, shaking uncontrollably. Returning, they lie squashed into bloody innards with patches of soft white fur catching the evening light in the middle of the road. So,
soft white fur, that's an image for you, isn't it?
Yeah.
Soft white fur catching the evening light.
Thanks, Sally, I knew you'd appreciate that. The hospital looms on the hillside, one of those 70s seven-story masterpieces, heralding the last gasp of functional socialism, a mix of fascist space and Pompidou aesthetics, or maybe it was just renovations. I couldn't really tell.
I do love a bit of brutalism.
Yeah. Well, it was a bit of a mix of the two, but there's quite a lot of that in France. Overlooking the Pont Creux, the Camargue, pan-parasoling car park, raucous crows, the ghost of Vincent prowling Montmajour nearby. You get the picture.
Mm.
She was in room 443, surrounded by every possible declension of medical apparatus. She was not well, her voice a whisper, vocal cords eaten by the beast. She thought it was a cold caused by the air conditioning. She was vomiting deep black putrid bile everywhere. Mm. That day, the doctor said to me, she's only on palliative drugs from now on. And I finally realized this was it. No more hope. I asked if I could bring you home. They said yes, brought you back in an ambulance, set you up in our bedroom. Drips, oxygen bottles, bedpans, and a room full of painkillers. You said no morphine. I must be conscient to fight the beast. Months before, you said, when I asked for morphine, you know it's the end. That night you vomited, dreamed, vomited. The next day you wanted to swim. You wanted flippers, a life buoy in a big hat. You must have weighed 30 kilos, but into the pool you went, floating around, everyone watching nervously. Then you threw away your hat and plunged to the bottom of the pool, surfacing with a big smile on your still beautiful face. That night you couldn't eat, went to bed early, then woke me at 2 a.m, vomiting and shitting all over the bed, yelling, give me the morphine. Once was not enough. I jabbed the needle into your thigh again, and you calmed down and whispered to me, sorry for the bordel, and became unconscious. The doctor arrived late in the morning, took one look at you and said, I will give her a massive shot of Valium, stop her from suffocating. After you left, I lay with you on the bed, your eyes closed, barely breathing, your left hand on my right thigh. Suddenly you open your eyes, look into the corner of the ceiling if someone was calling to you. Someone was, sorry, had been calling you. your eyes filled with recognition. I felt an enormous power surge, as if your soul had been called home. You then closed your eyes and breathed softly, very softly, until you were gone. Then one last breath like a sigh of relief, which made me leap out of my skin, and you were really gone. The problem was I couldn't tell if you were indeed dead. Claire, who had been massaging your feet, said they were getting cold and hard, then suggested holding a mirror up to your mouth. But we still couldn't tell. Then someone said, look at your eyes. If they are all pupil, that means no light, no life. I went out and told Susan, your Holocaust-surviving mother, who screamed and ran down the stairs. It was warm that June, climate change warm. Being Jewish, we had to wait 3 days before burying you in the Catholic cemetery of Fontvieille, even though you had told me years before you preferred cremation to burial, just in case you were not dead. Every night I would sit with you a little in the air-conditioned room, our bedroom. You had been cleaned and prepared by the thanatosium wound, but still painfully dead. Eaten alive by that horror as it slowly strangled you from inside. Sometimes I felt as if you might jump off that bed and with almighty strength bite my face off. It was extremely difficult to keep calm walking back down those narrow stairs. The day of your burial was even warmer. Susan and I had to suffer the sweaty kisses of many dark-suited black-capped men and the more restrained embraces of some very well-dressed, fragrantly alive, bejeweled women. We all said something and nothing. Watches were surreptitiously regarded. The TGV back to Paris would not wait. Your coffin was lowered into the ground and covered with dirt. You are in the new section of the cemetery next to the old railway line, surrounded by olive trees and sunflowers. Not so bad. I made a tombstone for you. It says Kathy, 1958-2005. I planted rosemary and thyme on top. There is room for me in there. The swallows dip and glide, never landing. That's it.
Wow. Wow, that's an extraordinary tale.
And Valet Kathy.
Yeah.
Valet Kathy, yes. It's the anniversary.
Right.
Is it?
It's June, yes.
Almost call for a moment's silence, doesn't it?
Yeah. God, Mark, you've outdone me again. All I've got is squashed cats. And
I, John, you led me on. I didn't feel quite so bad. I thought it was a little bit depressing, but when you started off so well.
It was so beautifully written, actually, Mark. It's really lovely. Do you do a lot of writing?
I've got quite a bit in there.
Wow. Really, really beautiful. That's a beautiful piece. Do we still have time? How long have we got? Okay. You wanted to talk about Sergeant Pepper, didn't you?
But I'm a bit sort of emptied after that. I've difficult to
well,
talk
I'm not
about
surprised.
Sergeant Pepper.
I've been thinking, Mark, about your remarks about politics in art and a fairly sort of, I think you're taking a fairly tough stance and we have to start thinking about what it is that in fact you mean both by politics and what you mean by art.
Mm. I think it's, yes, it's very much
so. I'm kind of interested in people, for instance, like Robert Motherwell, who made a large series of paintings, all with the same title, An Elegy to the Spanish Republic. And the title...
Which are very beautiful paintings.
They are beautiful paintings.
Which have absolutely nothing to do with the Spanish Republic.
No, but the title would suggest that they have a political motive of some sort.
Which is why so many artists who came after him or around his time made their abstract paintings were called untitled, as in Jackson Pollock.
Why?
Because they didn't want to give any. The basis of my argument is that art doesn't have a narrative. It can't actually tell a story. It can perhaps suggest, which is what Robert Motherwell, your very good example, Motherwell's those big black paintings.
Yeah, yeah, big sweeping black
paintings. Big sweeping black with a bit of black.
Not unlike your mate Soulage.
Soulage has made it he's still alive, you know, he's about 98, but he made that his signature art. Whereas
the big sweeping curve.
Yeah, Motherwell did quite a few other things. Yeah. He was quite a good writer also, Motherwell.
Well, apart from the fact that people had trouble naming their paintings after Motherwell made a political remark based on his... If the quality of the art and the quality of the political remark start to be reduced in some way, then the numbers of these objects start to increase, it would seem.
Mm.
So you could in fact say that a bit of paper with a heart drawn on it is a political work of art. It's making a political remark of some sort, perhaps a tedious and poor one, you know, that love exists or something. And it's not necessarily a very interesting work of art, but it exists as a political statement within a work of art.
My feeling is that if you're going to be an activist, then you've got to be out there. You can be talking about it. It's like everyone saying, you know, we thank the original owners of the land and all that sort of crap. It doesn't work in relation to, if you really want to do something, you do an act. You act. You don't just talk about it. You don't just make a painting of it either. I don't think I think it's too pretentious.
But surely it invites discussion and it forms some part of altering cultural discussion and cultural thought and therefore attitudes about things. Isn't that doing to some degree?
Well, look, we're in the middle of doing talking about things. We can talk to our heart's content. I just feel that intrinsically, if we're going to do something, then you have to act. You can't just be.
All right. Well, I guess it's time to fill the bottles with petrol, stuff rags in them, and
don't say things like that, John.
Well, look. Do you remember all the demonstrations in the 70s, which people don't seem to demonstrate.
Remember
in this
them well.
Yeah, you were probably there. Mm. Going Yankee, go home. Yankee, go home. Mm. And I just remember thinking at the time, do they really know what they're talking about? Is it really just about Vietnam, or is it just all these people wanting to be out in the street together?
My brother Andrew told me he at one stage worked in a factory where they made police truncheons, and he'd spend all week making police truncheons and all weekend getting bashed on the head with them.
That's terribly funny. Hey, and now's the time. We have actor, blogger and critic Cliff Allen joining us again today. He must have had some reason to come to Mornington today, and we're very pleased to have him. Hello, Cliff. Good morning.
Hello, Sally. Yeah. Can you hear me? Does this microphone work?
The microphone works, but you can't touch
it. Just don't touch it, Cliff. Don't touch.
Don't touch.
Don't touch it, because some naughty person over the weekend.
That's the story of my life. Don't touch. I'd done 10 years of my column, Grain of Salt, so I decided I would print it up. So I've been down there this morning at Office Works getting it all done. It's about 350 pages.
Oh, you're putting it in a book?
No, I'm not going to put it in a book. I've just going to print it all out.
Yeah.
And I've done a lot of editing, but I just thought I'd
do make
it.
A
if you have it on,
might break down anything, you know.
Having it on file, Cliff, means that the publishing of it is not that difficult these days. If you can send it off somewhere where they'll.
I'm not an ambitious person, so I really don't care. I just want a record of it.
Right.
Yeah.
At home, you know, when I die, they can have a look at it then. Sort of thing. So no big deal.
Hey, and before you go on, can I just mention that Cliff has handed me a piece of paper with a black and white photograph of it of himself and Sally Cooper in a scene, in the Midsummer Night's Dream scene from Away in 1986.
Oh, proof.
Look.
Directed by Neil Armfield.
And where was that on it?
That's at the Fairfax.
Right.
It was a Playbox production, but... yeah.
Dancing, by the look of it.
With hair, too.
Yes. And were you the principal? Who are you in the play?
You've seen the play.
Yes, just recently.
No, I played Jim.
The husband.
Yeah. Annie Phelan. And I did it with about four wives. We did 130 shows. So
you had a wig, Cliff?
I had four very tough, very good actresses. Yeah. Did I have a wig? No, that's not a wig.
That's your real hair.
That's our hair. With Lala. Which reminds me of La La Land. Anybody seen La La Land?
No. Yes.
Did that win the best movie? What about the other one? What was the other one? Moonlight?
Moonlight, yes. I'd like to see that also.
Sorry. Is it better than Casablanca? That's what I was going to
ask. I went to La La Land. Amanda took me along to see La La Land, and I doubted that I was going to enjoy it, but I did.
What was it about?
Can't remember.
It's a love story, but it's
it's a romantic musical.
Yeah, it's a musical romance.
Right.
Yeah, it was good.
With Ansel Stone. There's apparently a really great scene where the traffic jam, and they all start dancing around the traffic jam.
Well, that's the beginning of
the beginning.
Yeah. I suppose we should. Have we talked about John Wood's play? I suppose we have.
What Rabbit, Red Rabbit?
No, the one that's on Tuesday.
Oh, no, we haven't. Spring Awakening, yes. No, Bakersfield Mist, which by Stephen Sacks.
Bakersfield Mist with Judy Neal. Yeah. She's an unemployed bartender. Yeah.
Yeah, who thinks she's found a Jackson Pollock.
That's right. It's a comedy, so it's probably worth seeing. I'm not sure.
So that's on John the Wood's Frankston Arts Centre.
Comedy. That's on Tuesday. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cost you $55. It was in London on the stage. Got a moderate review. This one's produced by Theatre Royal and Tasmanian Theatre Company and Straight Jacket Productions in association with Carrie Laker. I don't know who they are, but they've been on tour all over the place with one night show. So
yeah, well, I
might
like
be
to
worth
see
going there on Tuesday, is it? Tuesday.
Tuesday. Well, so it's the 6th. Mm. He's quite a... he usually brings something pretty special to a role when he plays it, doesn't he, John Wood?
Well, he does if you like him.
Don't you like him?
Well, yeah, I've done 5 plays with him. Mm. He's very good at comedy.
Mm.
He's not very good at feeding lines.
Isn't he?
There's a difference.
Yeah, there absolutely is. Mm. I wanted to go and see him. In fact, I had tickets for White Rabbit, Red Rabbit, the play that has been written by the Iranian, whose name I actually can't pronounce, but he's banned from leaving Iran. It was on at the Art Centre. He leaves the script on a chair, and essentially an actor comes in having not ever read it before, and the writer is having a conversation with the performer who's on stage and the audience. I was really sick, so Will and my sister went along to it and said it was extraordinary. Cat Stewart's doing the same thing, I think, in a week's time.
And what are you saying? They're coming along and reading it cold.
Reading it cold. Oh, and it's an interaction really between the audience and the author, actually, because it's a conversation that the actor has to have with both.
Where does the interaction come in?
Well, I haven't seen it, so I really don't know. It's a kind of a mystery because it's such an unusual form. There's going to be a series of them at the Art Centre over the next 6 months. I'll definitely get along to one of them.
Mm. Oh, well. Mm. I don't know about the audience participation. That sort of gets me a bit. There's been a lot of negative reviews lately, though. I mean, I think we mentioned last week Cameron Woodhead and My Fair Lady.
Yes.
But he also came in hard on Joanna Murray's... Three Little Words. Came in hard on Minnie and Lara's. And there was some other one too he came in hard on. I can't remember what it was. And one that I mentioned last week... One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is coming too.
Oh, he didn't like that either.
I don't think he's critted that yet, but Peter Craven also critted Lally Katz's play, which is Minnie and Liz, and also not good. All the crits have been really moderate lately.
Oh, well, maybe we're getting some ordinary theatre.
I don't understand. Maybe Cameron Wood's getting a bit old. It might be the ageing process.
Well, he may have had a bad week or a bad month, or he may have picked the wrong plays.
I don't know, but they're getting a bit like me as they get older, aren't they?
Crankier.
Now... Let's go somewhere different. I want to go to Aquatic Drive, Albert Park Lake,
yes,
which is next to the Point Restaurant. And who's singing? Jimmy Fong singing. He sings Malaysian music. And that includes, I love this, bread and dips before the show and hot party finger food at the interval.
And his name is Jimmy Bong, did you say?
No,
Fong.
Jimmy Fong, F-O-N-G.
Oh, Fong.
He's a Malaysian singer. He sings a style of Malaysian music.
There's a Jimmy Wong
music restaurant.
Music
is a journey
Sydney.
And the journey is music.
Gosh. Mm.
And it's only about $20 if you're down Albert Park driveway. I rather like it. These sort of little things amuse me. I won't be up there, of course.
No, it's not going to get me up there, I'm afraid. It doesn't sound like
the
kind of
I used to go to the Mandarin Club, Cliff.
Yeah.
The Mandarin Club in Bourke Street in Melbourne. Yeah. And because I liked watching the Chinese girls in there singing pop songs in Mandarin.
That'd be lovely. What sort of beer do they serve, though? You know?
Beer?
Yeah, we've got to drink. You can't watch this without drinking.
No, I'd say you probably can't.
Anyway, I haven't got anything to say. I just dropped by
because
I was... I'll
tell you what, The One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was directed by Carl Sorheim at the MTC, and he was one of the filmmakers who won an award at the Peninsula Short Film Fest. In fact, we spoke to him. So I'm hopefully going to have him on the show next week.
Well, that's good, but don't forget what Mark said last week.
Which was?
Well, it's adapted by Dale Wesserman. from the novel by Ken Casey, K-S-E-Y. So you've got to put in the author's names all
Ken
the time.
Ken Kesey or Ken Casey?
Kesey.
Yeah.
Sometimes a great
You're
notion.
Big on it's author's good. Names and I'm I big am. On actors' names.
Yes.
Yeah. And how about getting old and grumpy? You've got anything to say about that? What can we do not to get, or is it just inevitable?
It's intriguing.
Is it a bad thing?
It is intriguing.
It's intriguing.
Because I can feel the onset of it.
I could say I totally agree, because everybody's saying totally agree lately. What does totally mean?
I don't know.
Why can't they agree?
Have they stopped saying absolutely?
No, they say absolutely right. Nearly scream. Footballers do it all the time.
You know? Do you know the one that I hate? I hate when people agree with you and they just say correct at you.
Oh, that's worse.
It's almost as bad as staying in the right-hand lane on the Peninsula Link.
Almost. We didn't get to that last week.
We're going to start a movement.
I do a piece of advice for all writers. You're a writer, obviously.
Mm.
Cut out the word that as many times as you can. It's a terrible word.
Yes.
Almost every time you can delete it.
No, but it's true. The editing is an extremely important part of any writing. Mm. Really, you're cutting it down, cutting it down. It's a bit like sculpting in a way, just getting rid of it.
Ernest Hemingway said that to write well, what you do is tell your story, then take out all the adjectives.
He did say that. Yeah.
Mm. But was he a great writer?
I like reading him.
Mm. He's not bad.
He's not bad.
His advice is very good.
Yes.
These books will send you to sleep a little bit. But
they do a bit.
All right.
A little bit like Scott, what's his name?
Fitzgerald.
Fitzgerald.
Ah, well, yes.
Hey, we're playing your song in the background. Can you hear it?
No.
Sea of Love by the Honey Drippers.
Ah, yes.
And we were going to play it for you last week and we ran out of time. We're just about running out of time again
such
now.
A great name, the Honey Drippers.
Honey Drippers is good,
isn't it? Yeah, they should cut that person out who decided that name.
Thanks for coming in, Cliff.
Pleasure.
Thanks, Cliff.
Hi.
Lovely to see
you. I won't be back for a month.
Oh.
What was that?
That was the end music instead of the typewriter music. However, there's no typewriter music. There we go.
That must be the time for the news.
It must be.
It must be, yes. Here we are.
Okay, Shrine is on at 45 Downstairs until mid-June. It's a wonderful production directed by one of our earlier guests, Marcel Dorney, and presented by the Kin Collective, written, of course, by Tim Winton. Shrine tackles the profound, debilitating subject of grief, which we have touched on this week in our show. In this case, inflicted upon a Western Australian family by the road death of their young son, Jack. It's gripping and poetic. Get along if you can.
The Flinders Art Show are celebrating their 50th year milestone and are open from Friday night through Monday afternoon.
On the Queen's birthday weekend, I forgot to put there,
and
sorry.
We had that lovely lady.
Kylie Stillman. Her show opened the opposite of Wild.
Yes, you went and had a look.
I went and had a look at that and it was good. And what she says is an accurate description of what she does.
So she knows what she's talking about or what she's doing.
She knows both things, Mark. She knows how to say it and how to do it.
Brilliant. That's on until Sunday, 6th of August at Domain House in Dallas Books Drive. John Cecil Fine Art has opened up a gallery in the Old Poffs restaurant in Red Hill.
The Old Poffs? Old Poffs.
To present original limited edition prints. The first exhibition is Lloyd Reed's Lithographs.
McClelland. Has anyone been to McClelland lately?
They're still operating.
Good. They're going to have a full moon sculpture walk.
Yeah, you know how you love the sculpture park there.
Yeah, and the sculptures in it.
Yeah, well now you can do it in the dark.
Yeah, but they'll be much better. Under a full moon, I'm sure they'll come up much better than in the full day of
with,
light
with
of
torches
day.
And a drink.
Torches?
Torches, light, okay, yeah, right. Illumination.
So that's 5:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday, 9th of June this year.
Spring Awakening is a Tony Award-winning musical set in Germany in 1891, in a world where adults hold all the cards and the youth struggle through a time when sexual education was non-existent. That's on at Chapel on Chapel right at the moment, and I think it runs through until the 7th or the 8th.
And in big type here, Bakersfield Mist by Stephen Sachs.
Yes.
Sachs.
Yeah. That's on at the FAC on June 6th.
It's on at FAC.
With John Wood and Jenny Nil. And also, there's an exhibition on at Oak Hill Gallery by Catherine Hope called Catherine Hope, called Vision and Hope. And she does encaustic work. That's burning, isn't it, John?
Wax.
Wax, is it?
Yeah. Mark and I have both seen these objects.
Yes.
Mark won't remember, but I remember him looking at them, and they have a bit of charm about them, actually. Oh, okay.
These are at the Mornington Gallery.
They're at the Oak Hill and...
But we saw some over in Summers, Mark, you and I.
Okay.
Made out of wax with a kind of etched surface.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Well, that's on until June the 28th at the Oak Hill Gallery. If you've just tuned in, you've missed Arts About. You can catch up with the show via podcast, which should appear on the station website sometime in the future. The show's on air and streaming Wednesdays at 12, where it repeats. You'll find a link to our Facebook page on the RWP website. Join us again 11 a.m. next Sunday. And remember, everybody, we may not know everything about art,
but we know a bit about pets.
Well, we do now.
Oh, good night.
Thanks, Brody.